please help me out by standing up and just go ahead and give him a big round of applause to Mr. Glenn Smith.
Oh, thank you. Please be seated. It's so great to be here. I have to tell you, I'll be honest with you, I'm kind of an emotional guy, and Thomas just wrecked me. So I've been working the last half hour kind of recovering from that. So Thomas, thank you so much for sharing. And I just found out he didn't have another box. I want a box to give to my client. So I'll turn my form in and get you to ship me one. So thank you so much. What a great, I can't even talk about it. I'll just get wrecked again. So anyway, thank you for being here. I'm delighted to be here with you. Tell you a little bit about my story. My wife and I, we were high school sweethearts also, and we got married in college. But we actually met in seventh grade. And in seventh grade, she signed my yearbook. And so had a seventh grade science class together. And then we didn't see each other in eighth grade or ninth grade. Tenth grade, she actually got bused to a different school district. And then 11th grade, we were back together again in high school. And in May of our junior year in high school, I asked her out on a date. And so she said, sure. And so we went on a picnic on a Saturday afternoon. And so we're out by the lake. We grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee, beautiful lake there in the area, having a picnic. And we're talking, and it's just going wonderful. You know, I really like this girl, and, you know, it's just going great. And then she asked me the question. She said, where did you go to junior high school? And I said, same place you did. And she said, oh, no, you didn't. And she told me where she went. I said, yeah, we went together. She goes, we did? Oh, okay. I said, in fact, we had seventh grade science together. Do you remember? She goes, no, I had Mr. Kimsey right before lunch. I said, I know. I did too. We were both in there. She's like, really? I said, yeah. And she's like, wow. Yeah. I said, in fact, you signed my seventh grade yearbook. She said, really? I said, yeah. In fact, you know what you said in it? Because I remembered. You signed it and said to a great guy who I'll never forget. She really thought I was pulling her leg, and I had to go home and pull that thing out and show it to her. And she said, oh, my goodness, you know. So it was love and marriage right away. So anyway, that's how we got started. But we had an interesting journey together. She grew up in a family-owned business, as did I. Her father had an excavating company and eventually started another business, a trucking business. And so she grew up in an entrepreneur's home and in a family business. And I grew up in a family business. My father was a pilot. He owned aviation businesses. And so I grew up in aviation. And, you know, growing up in business, in a family business, gives us as kids some tremendous opportunities and experiences that, frankly, other people don't get. And so I just treasure and appreciate so much having that experience and that just what my parents built into us. Because we both learned things that a lot of times people don't get to learn, like an incredible work ethic, like being responsible, like taking care of others, and so many other virtues that small business owners, that's just who you are. And I was telling the group yesterday, and I get a little emotional when I say this, but I just believe small business owners are the salt of the earth. And so thank you for being who you are and for being here. So growing up in a small business, you get to see a lot of things and experience a lot of things. In aviation, it was kind of cool because I was flying all over the country with my father sitting in the cockpit. And he did a lot of charter flying, and so I got to go with him a lot. And when I turned 14, my father said, you know what? We ought to get you a logbook. and let you start logging time. And I said, okay, great. And so as a 14-year-old, I've got my pilot logbook, logging time. And when I turned 16, he said, you need to get your student license now, which I did. When I turned 17, he said, you need to get your private pilot's license now, which I did. And so that was what it was like growing up for me. And I just thought that was normal. And I realized not everybody gets to have the kind of experiences we get as kids growing up in family businesses. So it was just an incredible, incredible time. My wife and I got married in college in the mid-70s. And in the late 70s, I went to work for my father, managing his third aviation business. And that was a great experience, again, just learning and getting to do stuff, things that other young adults never get to do. And it was a great experience. I left the business, I left the family business a little bit to my father's chagrin, and went into faith-based ministry work and did that for about 20 years. And in that period of time, I also started a business that did well, and I was able to sell that business. And so that was a blessing. And then in 2002, I was working in a church as an executive pastor, a large church here in the Houston area. And we had 45 full-time staff, 75 part-time staff, and nearly 1,000 volunteers. So that was my job was managing the whole staff team and programming of the church. And so when our senior minister retired, I thought, I'm doing a lot of coaching with my staff. I'm doing a lot of coaching with business leaders in our church. I think I'd like to do this as a living. I think I can. And so I shared this story yesterday with the folks who were there. I had this group of businessmen in the church that I was working with and coaching with. And I approached them. I said, what do you think? Do you think I could do this? Do you think this is, in my mind, a little bit crazy because I'm leaving a real comfortable job and salary and, you know, everything's going fine there. And I'm going to step out and, you know, I'll eat what I kill. You know, it's one of those things. You know what it's like. And so I approached these guys and said, what do you think? And they said, oh, yes, yeah, you ought to do it, you know. And they were slapping me on the back and high-fiving and said, yeah, that's you. You ought to do it. It'll be great. And I said, okay, well, here's the kicker. Will you be my first clients and will you pay me? And half of them said yes. And so that's how I got started in coaching in 2002. And that's what I've been doing ever since. Most of my clients are business owners, just like you, small business owners. And we see the kinds of things all the time. There's really nothing that's, you know, I hate to say this in a way, but there's really nothing real unique about various different businesses. We all struggle with the same things. We all need the same systems. We all need marketing. We all need sales. We all need operations. We all need finance and administration. We all need the same things, and we all struggle with the same things. I have a coaching group, and I had a group of business owners just this morning. We meet once a month on a Thursday morning, and I was meeting with them, and one of the women in the group, a business owner, she says, can I say something in this group that, she said, I just want to be vulnerable. Can I say this? Is this a safe place? And, of course, we all said, absolutely. You know, what is it? And she said, and tears came to her eyes, and she said, sometimes I just feel like a failure as a business owner. And we all said, I know. We've all felt that too. And she talked about it a little bit more. And it was an incredible time to see other business owners, you know, step up and encourage her and just give her hope and strength. And you know how they did it? They did it just like Thomas said. They did it with their words. They did it with their words. They spoke life words to her. And That just happened this morning. It was a pretty incredible time. But you know, as I work with business owners, we all wrestle with organization. You know, things get crazy and chaotic. And we wrestle with systems and processes. And that's why I appreciate so much what Howard does and what he teaches. Because what he shared with you this morning about systems mastery is so important and so powerful. Because we struggle with organization. We struggle with scalability. Most all of the people I talk to who are business owners say, I want to grow my business, but I'm not really sure how. Or it's growing, but it's not really growing as fast as I want it and need it to grow. And so we struggle with scalability a lot of times. We struggle with profitability because oftentimes the money we're making, we're still putting back into the business to try to grow the business and develop the business. And we're trying to hire people who can help us with the business. And so we're always watching the cash flow closely and trying to make sure we're increasing our profitability all the time. And the truth is, very few small business owners pay themselves what they should. And so I hope you, if you're not doing it yet, you're going to get started really soon paying yourself what you should be paid as a business owner. And we wrestle with solving problems. All of us wrestle with marketing challenges and people problems and things like that. We wrestle with those things. We're always wanting to figure out how do we get control of this thing. You know, the business is growing and it's really maybe sometimes going crazy. And we want to control it. We got to get some control here. And from time to time, we hit a ceiling. And businesses actually go through a life cycle. I don't know if you've thought about that or read about that, but businesses go through a life cycle. And think of it in terms of the human life cycle. It starts with infancy. Business infancy is when you're just getting started and you're asking yourself, am I going to be able to sell anything? Am I going to be able to generate any cash from this effort and this business? That's infancy. You're trying to see, does this business have legs? Is it going to run? And you discover, yeah, people will pay me for my service. People will pay us for our product. We can make some money doing this. And all of a sudden you get excited. And then you start working really hard and you move from infancy into childhood. And business childhood is where you're starting to run really, really hard because you know if you run harder, you can get more done and you can make more money and you're running harder and harder and harder. And, you know, before you know it, it's just you're working 80 hours a week. Because you just see, well, if I can just do a little bit more, if I can just, you know, spend a little bit more time, if I can just, you know, get a little bit more stuff accomplished this week, we can make some more money and we can do those other things that we're hoping and trying to do. And so that's childhood phase of business. And that's normal. And maybe a lot of you are in that place today. But that's not sustainable. And again, that's one of the reasons why the phenomenal program here is so important. Because it will help you move from that stage of childhood to the next stage, which is adolescence. Adolescence is that time of change in human development. It's also that time of change in business growth. Businesses have to make changes. Business owners have to make changes. They have to start trusting people to do things in their company. They have to build systems and trust their systems. They have to find ways to get leverage so that they're not working 80 hours a week. And so we're changing things. And that's uncomfortable for us as the owners. It's also uncomfortable for the people that we have working for us because they kind of like the way we were doing it before. And now we're changing. Oh, my gosh, you made somebody a manager or a director? Well, I want to work for you, Mr. Business Owner or Miss Business Owner. I don't want to work for them. I've seen that happen so many times. You have too, probably. So, you know, things are changing. And when things like that start changing, that's the adolescent phase of a business. But it has to happen. You've got to go through that time to get to adulthood. And you know your business has reached business adulthood when you've got all of your critical systems in place and they're running basically without you. That's when a business hits adulthood. And so maybe some of you are there. I have a hunch probably most of you are hoping to get there someday very soon. And then businesses hit their prime. As they do that for a while, they get to their prime. And when you get to the prime, you know what you have to do? You have to recreate yourself. And so it goes on and on. But what's interesting is at every stage in the business life cycle, there are new opportunities and there are new challenges. And I'll say more about that in a minute. This was first talked about in the very first book that was written that I know of, and I've asked others, it's the first book they know of, for small business owners. It was written in 1986, and it was titled The E-Myth. How many of you have read The E-Myth? Okay, good. Michael Gerber wrote that. Now, I left the family business in the early 80s, but in 86, when he first came out with that book, I got it, and I read it, and I thought, oh my goodness, I wish my father and I had had this to work together on. Because it would have been so powerful for us to start thinking about creating a prototype and creating systems and creating a business that could run without us, or particularly for him, could run without him. Because the truth is, his business totally depended on him. And my father-in-law, his business totally depended on him. They were successful. They actually made a lot of money. But they never got freedom from the business. And so Michael Gerber wrote this book, The E-Myth. It was probably one of the two most important books that every business owner should read. And so since that time, a lot of books have been written, a lot of great books on business and leadership. But in 2011, there was a second book written. And if business owners, or when business owners ask me, you know, what should I read? The first thing I ask them is, have you read The E-Myth Revisited? Because in 2000, it was republished as The E-Myth Revisited. And so many have, just like you. And then I'll say, have you read the book Traction? And Traction is the book I want to reference today. In 2011, this book came out. And when I first read it, I thought, well, there's really nothing new in here. He's talking about the stuff Gerber talked about in The E-Myth. He's talking about stuff that Jim Collins talked about. He's talking about stuff that Patrick Lencioni talked about. He's talking about stuff that Howard's talked about. What's unique about this book? And at first, I didn't get it. But then I started hearing business owners like us say, that thing's changed my life. I've been implementing this process, this system in here, and it's completely transformed my business. And I came back to it and I said, what did I miss? And I started reading it again and thinking about it and looking at it and talking to these business owners. And here's what I discovered. When Michael Gerber first wrote The E-Myth in 86, there was not a lot of literature out there for us. There were a lot of good personal development books and resources. In fact, Tom's father, Zig Ziglar, had some of the best, and they're still some of the best. But books specifically for small businesses, there just weren't a lot of those kind of resources. But over time, after The E-Myth, there were a lot of business books. Most of them address larger companies. More came out. More tools and resources for us to think about. In fact, where we find ourselves today, there is so much information out there. Sometimes it's hard to know, well, where do I start? Should I start with this book? Should I start with this book? Should I start with that? Where should I start? There's so much information, and it's all good. Traction gives us an overarching management system for our businesses. And Wickman, the author, calls it the Entrepreneurial Operating System, or EOS. How many of you have heard, other than those of you who were here yesterday, how many of you have heard of EOS? Would you raise your hands? Okay, a few of you had. Are y'all using EOS in your business? You are? Perfect, good. Have y'all been a little bit? Okay, very good. So I want to share with you in my session here a little bit about the basic EOS model. And this is something I want you to think about. I want you to kind of process, because EOS, to really put it into practice in your business, it's a process. You don't just leave the conference and go, okay, tomorrow we're going to be an EOS company. It isn't going to happen that way. It's a process of implementing it. And so what I typically do with clients is, as a company, they say, we want to implement this in our business. And I typically then schedule a series of 4 one-day retreats with them to help them and their leadership team implement it. And what do we work on? Well, here's what Wickman discovered and what he built the model on. This is your business. And what makes a business strong are 6 key components. These 6 things you and I need to be strong at, not just aware of. Most business owners are aware of these things, but we've got to get strong at them. If we're going to have the control we want in our business, if we're going to have the growth and scalability we want in our business, we've got to get control and we've got to get these 6 key components strong. And I want to share with you what those 6 key components are. The first one you've already heard today, but I want to take it a little deeper for you. It's vision. That's the first thing. You've got to have a vision. I know you heard that from Howard this morning. You heard Thomas talk about it. But it's true. You've got to have a vision of where you want to go with your company. In EOS, we have an organizational assessment. It's an organizational checkup. And it's like a little test assessment that we have the owner and their leadership team take together. And a lot of times what happens when people take that assessment, you score yourself on a scale of 100%. And the owner will oftentimes score it at 75, 80%, maybe 85%. And the employees will score it at 40%, 45%. And one of the big areas where there's difference is this area of vision. Because most business owners, you've got an idea, you've got a dream, you've got in your mind kind of what you want to see happen and where you want to go. But what you haven't done, probably, is written it down and thought it through in a way that you can communicate it and involve your key leaders in your company. Now, every one of us, we have key people in our company that we really depend on. And these people are the kind of people you want to develop and groom for management, to make them those managers in the org chart that Howard talked about this morning. And maybe you've already got that. But what you want to do is identify those 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 key leaders in your company and pull them together as a leadership team. Because the bottleneck in your company, just like everywhere else, is always at the top of the bottle. Okay? And if you're the only leader in your company, you've got a serious capacity problem. And so you want to have other leaders. Maybe it's just 1 or 2 other people, but you're developing them, you're investing in them, and you're sharing the thinking and the brainstorming and the planning process with them, and they are becoming your leadership team. And what you want to do when it comes to vision is you want to include them in that process. But how do you include them? They, you know, many business owners I talk to, they don't know a lot about vision, and their people know even less. How do you educate them about vision? Now, you come to conferences like this, probably read good books, and so you're pretty aware of what vision is. But how do we engage our key people in thinking through and helping us develop a vision? Now, you're going to have a personal vision that's yours, or you and your spouse's. But what you want to develop is a vision with your team where they own it and they share it. Research tells us that 7 out of 10 employees in America are not engaged in their work. 7 out of 10. They come to work every day. They may punch the clock. They may do stuff. And then they go home. But they're not passionate about it. They're not excited about it. They're not engaged. And I hear business owners say this a lot. You know, I just wish my people just care at least half as much as I do. I mean, we care a lot, right? Wouldn't it be great if you had 2 or 3 other key people who cared as much as you do? Now, when I say that to business owners a lot of times, they say, that'll never happen. And you know what they speak into existence? It'll never happen. I want to tell you, it can happen. And if you choose it, it will happen. And again, I just appreciate so much what Thomas was sharing with us, because it's true. What he was sharing with us is truth. And so you want a team of people, a leadership team, that you can develop who will care like you care. And the place to begin is helping them be a part of developing that vision for your company, so that you all own it. And the way we do it in EOS is we have a tool called the Vision Traction Organizer, a one-page tool. Those of you who were here yesterday, do any of you have your VTO handy? I meant to have one with me this morning, and I forgot to bring it. Could I borrow yours? Thank you so much. So this is a tool we use in EOS. It's called the Vision Traction Organizer. And this is what you work through with your leadership team. And this is how you implement EOS. It's a set of tools that you teach your leadership team to use. And this is just one of them, but it's a very important one because it's built around 8 questions. And if you walk through these 8 questions with your leadership team and together y'all process these and answer these and document what you agreed on, at the end of that time, you will have a very clear vision shared by all in leadership. And when people own the vision, they care about the business just like you do. Because it's not just them working for your vision, it's our vision. It's our vision. We're in this together. And so you want them to be engaged, and the way you do it is you help them develop this vision through the 8 questions. And, research, this is an interesting point of research. 100 CEOs across America were asked this question: what creates employee engagement? 100 CEOs were asked the question, what creates employee engagement? 95 of those 100 CEOs had the same answer. And the answer was, I don't know. Can you believe that? I don't know. 95 out of 100 CEOs, they wrestle with this. They think about it and they're like, I don't know. You can know. And you can create engagement. And so other research tells us that, you know what people want? They want to know where we're going. What are we doing and where are we going? I mean, I know we produce widgets and I come to work every day and we make widgets. But where are we going as a company? And what we've learned is that people, they want meaning. They want meaning. They want a paycheck, yes. But you know what? More than that, they want meaning. They want their work to have meaning. And it starts with having a shared vision that we all embrace, we develop, we embrace, and we agree on, and we all start pulling together on. And when employees do that, you know what happens is they start doing extra things. And you go, wow, thank you for doing that. You didn't have to do that, but thank you for doing that. And they start putting in extra effort. And you will see it. You will see who's engaged in your company and who's not. And you want a small group of leaders who are totally engaged with you and your company. And it is possible. And so the vision is a key part of getting there. There's a great book that just came out this year called 9 Lies About Work. Have any of you read this? nine lies. Have you read this one? Nine lies about work. And one of the first lies is that we think what matters the most to people is the prestige and the money in where they work. I work for a cool company like Google or Facebook or something like that. And what matters the most is the money. You know what they've discovered in the Gallup organization, and it's their research that went into this book, is that people will leave those companies to find meaning. And they will actually work for less money a lot of times if they can find meaning in their work. And so they find meaning because your vision is more than just money. You know, this year we made this much. Next year we want to make that much. I want you to know that doesn't inspire anybody. Everybody wants more money, but nobody's really that inspired by it. They're inspired when together you say things like, we want to change our people's lives for the better. They get inspired about that. They get inspired about, you know, we want to change our industry. We want to change how people view the work that we do because the quality of what we do is so extraordinary. When you bring meaning, people want to be at work. They want to be engaged with you. And so that was one of the lies out of the book. So you want a clarity. You get clarity by answering the eight questions. And you want it shared by all, everybody on the team. One last thing before I move on. John Cotter wrote a book entitled Leading Change. It's all about leadership. And this is what Cotter said. He said, the typical leader undercommunicates vision by a factor of 10. The average leader undercommunicates vision by a factor of 10. In parent effectiveness training, we learned that you have to tell your kids something 7 times before they even hear it once. Isn't that true? We know that. And so this thing about vision is not something that you're going to go home tonight or go to your room tonight or go home this weekend and go, okay, I'm going to write my vision and it's going to be done. It's going to take some more thought and process than that. Okay? And I encourage you to use these 8 questions to do it with your leadership team. And then once you fill out this Vision Traction Organizer, which you can actually download online, just Google Vision Traction Organizer, and you can download this. Fill it out, and once you fill it out, then you have a weekly meeting, and every team member brings it with them. And this is their plan. This is their high-level strategic plan that they work from. And then you update it every quarter. And you're looking at it together every week. And what results is you end up with a strong vision that's shared by all. That's what it takes to get strong in this area of vision. Most businesses are 10 to 20% strong there. We want you to be 80% strong or better. The second key component in this model is the people component. And we talk a lot about people and our, you know, how do we build people and develop our people. There are 3 levers that will give you leverage, that will enable you to work less but make more money. Those 3 levers are systems, technology, and people. You get leverage through systems. You can accomplish more with less effort and less time if you've got good systems. You can accomplish more if you've got good technology. And you can accomplish more if you've got the right people in the right seats. That's how we say it in EOS. There's a story that Wickman tells in the book about this guy who was out hiking in the mountains. And he gets too close to the edge of a cliff and he falls off. And on his way down, he goes through these vines and he grabs hold of one. And he stops his fall and he's hanging there on this vine. And he looks up and it's about 1,000 feet up to the top. And he knows he can't climb up there, and he looks down, and it's about 1,000 feet down to the floor there, and he's like, you know, he has no, what's he going to do? And he see, so he does the only thing he knows to do, he prays. And he looks up into heaven, and he says, is anybody up there? Is anybody up there? And he hears a voice from heaven that says, do you believe? And he says, yes, I believe. I believe. And the voice says, let go. And he pauses and he goes, is there anybody else up there? And that's the way we are as business owners a lot of times. You know, we got to let go of stuff, but we don't let go because we don't have confidence in our people. We need to delegate. We hear it all the time, but we don't do it because we don't have confidence in our people and the process that they might choose to follow. And so you've got to get to a place where you can trust your people. You can trust them with your customers. You can trust them with the process. You can trust them with the outcome. You can trust them with the results. You got to get to that place. How do you get to that place? Well, it starts by making sure you've got the right people. How do you know if you've got the right people? The first thing is, you've got to have very clear values defined. And again, this is something you should process with your leadership team so that everybody in leadership owns it. It's not just you handing down some. It's the team. We own this. And you want to make sure everybody in your team shares your values. Because if you don't have confidence that they share your basic beliefs and values and vision, you're not going to trust them. And you're not going to delegate to them very much. You're going to hold back a lot. And you're not going to let go of the vine. So, we take you through a process of getting clarity about those key values that they've got to love and live and embrace so that you can trust them and you can have peace of mind. You want them at a place where if you leave, you know they're going to do the right things and things are going to get taken care of. That's how you know, that's how you know if you got the right people. But you also have to have the right people in the right seats. Is this seat that they're in, is this role that they're in, is it the right role for them? For many businesses I work with, they just need people. I just need to get people. You know, getting people so hard. And getting people to stay is hard. And so they feel like, I just need people. And so if I get somebody, I don't want to lose them. Even if they're performing poorly, even if things aren't going as good as they should, I just don't want to have to go find somebody else and hire somebody else. Now, I know all of us have felt that. But you've got to get very intentional about this because, again, you'll never let go of the vine unless you know you got the right people and you know they're in the right seats. So the work that Howard does around the DISC tool, how many of you have taken the DISC? Okay, perfect. So you know what I'm talking about. The DISC helps you understand yourself and it helps you understand your people. And so when I work with leadership teams, you want your whole leadership team to do that. So we know what each other's personality preferences and their behavioral styles and tendencies are. So we get to know each other and build relationships. We share the same values so we know we got the right people. And then we talk about strengths and responsibilities and accountabilities. And we use the accountability chart to make sure people are, number one, in the right seat and they're doing the right things. And so those are important tools. And so as we implement EOS, these are some of the tools. And by the way, EOS is just a collection of tools that work together to strengthen these six key components. What do you do after that? Well, the last thing I want to say about this is you've got to have ongoing training. You've got to have ongoing training. What do you train on? You train on leadership. You train on safety. And you train on systems. Those are the three things you want to be training on all the time. Leadership, safety, and systems. And that should be a part of just your culture. We do this all the time. We're always training. Yesterday I talked to the group that was here about the concept of a pipeline, creating a leadership track, a leadership development track in your business. And you can do that. And I'm working with a company here in Houston. They're one of the largest pool service companies in the whole Houston region. They're growing about 35% a year, and have been for a while, and are going to do that again this year. So they're growing, they're getting large, and pool service companies are extremely dependent upon $12 an hour people. Okay? And so when they hire somebody to be a pool tech for them, these are people that, you know, they're looking for a $11 or $12 an hour job. And so what's typical in their industry, what's typical in many of our industries, different industries we're in here, is we hire people who are, you know, just starting out in that kind of level, and there's a lot of turnover. They work there until they can find a job where they can make 25 cents an hour more, and they leave us. And we think, if I'd known that, I'd have given them 25 cents a dollar an hour more, you know? But there's not the loyalty, there's not the connection, and they leave us. And so this particular client that I'm working with, they decided part of their vision is they wanted to change their industry because their industry turnover rate among pool techs is very high, and that's common a lot in service businesses. And so they started developing what they call Pool University. And they tell people, they talk to people when they come and interview for a job. They say, listen, if you come to work here, I just want you to know you're enrolling in Pool University. And they go, oh, yeah, right, great, you know. No, let me tell you what that is. There's six disciplines that you're going to learn here. You're going to learn mechanics because there are mechanical parts to these pools. You're going to learn chemistry, because you got to understand the chemistry of these pools. And they go through these six disciplines. And when they get through, that prospect is going, wow, you people are serious. And so they decide, do I want to work for a serious job or, you know, not? And it's kind of cool. It kind of weeds people out who, you know, are just looking for that 25 cent an hour increase. And they get to select the people who say, yeah, I'd like to learn that. Yes, I'd like to really grow. And they say, and you know what? You're going to get to make a little bit more money. First raise is only going to be 50 cents an hour. But when you get to this point and you master these things, and we give you a written test on these topics. And they're like, a written test? That's right. And you get multiple times to pass it, and we help you. But once you pass that test, then you get your first raise. And it can be in 30 days, it can be in 60 days, it can be in 90 days, whatever pace you want to take it at. But you set the pace, how much you want to learn and how fast you want to learn it. And you see what they're doing is they're creating a culture with entry-level workers where they're starting to think, wow, I can develop, I can grow, I can learn, I can be something here. And they do it. And they're doing a fantastic job. And in just 1 year of implementing this program and this system, they have already surpassed in their employee retention their entire industry. And they're still improving. And that's one of their metrics. They track every week, how are we doing on employee retention? Because they need, right now, I think they have about 25 pool techs. And as they grow at 35% a year, they're going to need more and more and more every year. So people is a key component. It's got to be strong. If your company is having frequent and regular turnover, you're not going to be strong in this area. And it's going to undermine your ability to grow. The third component is data. We've got to know what the important data is that we want to track. Now, the challenge for us today is that there's so much data available to us, we don't know really what to pay attention to. If you look at Google Analytics and the analytics with your social media platforms and the analytics that your industry softwares provide, there's so much analytic data, we don't know what to do with it all. And the truth of the matter is this. There are probably only about 5 to 10 numbers that you need to track to know that your business is strong and healthy. That's really all you need to track. The rest of it's just interesting. But there are about 5 or 6, no more than 10 typically, metrics that you need to be looking at every week and monitoring every week in order to know our company's doing well, everything's moving in the right direction. And so in EOS, we help you identify those key metrics, and we put them together in what we call a scorecard. Some businesses call it dashboard, some people call them flash reports, some people call them KPIs, but we call it a scorecard. And every week, you're looking at your numbers. How are we doing in these 5 to 10 critical areas? And you're measuring yourself, and you're tracking your data. But there's one more component to data, and that's what we call measurables. And this is where you work with every key person in your company, every person in your company, period, even techs. And you say, what is the one most important metric and number you need to be tracking? Because here's what we learned. What gets measured gets done. And the second thing we learned is this. What gets measured gets improved. And so the person that really brought this to our attention years ago was Charles Schwab. He was the CEO at Bethlehem Steel. And they were going through a time in this one particular plant of theirs. And the plant wasn't performing well. And so Mr. Schwab went out on the plant floor there, and he was talking to the day supervisor. And they're trying to figure out, how do I help them? We're kind of stuck here. We're not really performing well. What do we do? And he's talking to him, and he can't quite figure out what to say or do. And he comes up with this idea. And he asks the day supervisor, it's the end of the day, he says, how many units did y'all produce today? And the day supervisor said, 6. And Mr. Schwab said, okay. And he takes a big piece of chalk, and he walks over to a big area on the floor, and he writes the number 6 on the floor. And then he puts the chalk down, and he leaves. Well, when the night shift supervisor came in, he comes in and he sees this big 6 on the floor, and he says, what's that? And the day shift supervisor said, well, Mr. Schwab came in and he was talking about, you know, what can we do to improve our production? And he asked me how many units we made yesterday today, and he said, I said 6. He wrote the 6 down and left. Oh, okay. And so the next morning, Mr. Schwab comes in, and guess what? That morning, the night shift supervisor had marked out the 6 and put 7. Because he led his team that night to produce 7. We got to beat the day shift. And the day shift came in, same thing happened. When they got through, it marked it out, put 8. And before you know it, that plant became the highest producing plant in their whole company. Now, what's the point? The point is, people like to grow. They like to compete with themselves. It's not really competing with others. It's competing with yourself. Can we do better? And when people embrace that, they start doing better. They start measuring themselves, and what gets measured gets improved. And so this measurable we talk about is helping everybody in your company have one number. What's the one thing for you? It might be related to sales if they're in the sales department. It might be related to operations or customer service if they're in the operations department. It might be related to something else in administration. But everybody in your company needs a number. And when companies implement this, it becomes a culture thing in the company. Hey, what's your number? You know, and it builds camaraderie and enthusiasm and engagement. So data is not something you use to hurt people. Data is something you use to inspire people. And data is important because data has no agenda. Data does not lie. And data is not emotional. So let's just work with data. What are we working with? And when everybody has a number, they rise to it. And they want to raise their number over time. And that's how you continue to grow and improve your organization. The fourth key component is issues. Every company has issues. You know, I started out telling you about the life cycle of a business. Starts at infancy and then childhood and adolescence. You know, as you grow in your business, you never grow out of issues. Have you realized that? I think sometimes we think that, man, if I can just get to a certain place, I won't have any more problems or issues. No, you just have different problems and issues. And every stage, well, it's a new set of challenges. And those challenges get more complex as you go up the different stages. And so actually in every business, there are three types of problems. And you might want to write this down. Number one, there are normal problems. These are just things that happen just because we're growing and we're doing good work. Oh, we run into a customer issue. Oh, we run into a sales challenge. Oh, we run into this. Every business has normal problems. And in a healthy business, we have a way to identify the problem, to address the problem, and to solve the problem. And we call that an issue. And so in the EOS model, we give you tools to help you identify your challenges and issues, process those, and solve them. But sometimes, you know, we live with problems. And we know we should address it, but I don't want to take the time. I don't want to take the emotional energy to do it. And we just live with it. And it's kind of like a piece of gravel in your shoe, you know. You feel it, and you go, oh, man, I should stop and take my shoe off and get that out, but I don't want to stop right now. And so you just kind of keep walking on it, you know. And that's what we do in our businesses a lot of times. And those issues never go away. And sometimes we think, oh, if I just ignore it long enough, it'll go away. And it doesn't typically. So you need to be addressing these issues as they come up, resolving them, solving them, and involving your leadership team in this process so they know how to do this without you. How many of you feel like you're the only one in your company who can solve a problem? A lot of business owners do. Wouldn't it be cool if you had a leadership team that you could say, hey, I'm going to be out this week. I need you guys to solve this problem. And you could trust them because you got the right people in the right seats. That's the goal. So if you don't resolve the problem, it goes to the second type of problem, which is abnormal problems. So there are normal problems that just come with growth and life, but if they don't get resolved, they become abnormal problems. One writer I read called them cul-de-sac problems because you just kind of keep going around and around and around and around in the cul-de-sac. You know, you never get out of that cycle or that circle, and it's an abnormal problem. The third type of problem is what we call pathological problems. And when you have an abnormal problem, you typically need an outside set of eyes to help you look at it because you're not seeing it and you're not prioritizing it in the right way. And so those outside eyes could be a peer, a fellow business owner, could be a coach, could be a consultant, could be a good business savvy friend. But you need some outside eyes. But if you don't solve abnormal problems, many of them will turn into pathological problems, and they will kill you. They will kill you. Like, I never can get out of the cash flow crunch. Over time, that will kill you. I can't conquer the employee retention challenge. Over time, that will kill you. This pool company I was telling you about, they realize this. They realize if we keep growing the way we're growing, we will not be able to sustain it if we don't change our retention challenges. And so they became proactive and have done a fantastic job at it. So Every company has issues. Don't be ashamed of it. It's just life, okay? Life happens. Issues happen. And you have to address them and resolve them. The fifth component is process. And this is where Howard's systems become so valuable to you. Because in every company, you need to define and document your processes, your critical processes. And a system is a collection of processes. So an HR system is a collection of HR processes. Hiring is a process. Onboarding is a process. Performance management is a process. Those are all HR processes in the HR system. And in every process, there are a series of procedures. And you want to have checklists for every procedure. A checklist. Every procedure needs a checklist. And every process needs a flow chart. And so the two things we talk about a lot are checklists and flow charts. Because everybody in your company needs to see them. They need to visually see them. They need to see the checklist and they need to see the flow chart so they can mentally get it in their head. This is what we do and how we do it. And it's powerful because then there's a good chance it'll be followed by all. And that's what you want. You want everybody doing it the way your company does it. And so processes are very important. There's a couple of good softwares that many of my clients are using. Have any of you used Process Street? Have any of you used Pipeify? If you're interested, those are good softwares, subscriptions that they're not expensive, but they're a great way to document your processes and your procedures, okay? So processes is the fifth component. And the last component, and we're going to wrap up here with this, the last component is traction. And the way you get traction in your business is two ways. You get traction through what we call rocks, and you get traction through meetings. And let me tell you how that works. Rocks are simply 90-day goals. But we call them rocks for a reason. And we get it from Stephen Covey. Stephen Covey tells a story about a gentleman who was speaking at a university. And he had a jar, a big jar, of bull rocks on the table. And this jar was full of these bull rocks. He couldn't put another bull rock in the jar. And he asked his audience, he says, "Is this jar full?" And the audience says, "Yeah, it's full." And he says, "Well, not really." And he reached under the table and he pulled up a bucket of gravel. And he poured the gravel in and the gravel fell in all the open spaces and everything. Whoops, sorry about that. How did I do that? Okay, bring me back. Thank you, man. So he pours the gravel in and it fills all the empty spaces. He says, "Now is the jar full?" And everybody goes, oh, yeah, now it's full. And he says, "Well, not really." And he reaches under the table and he gets a bucket of sand. And he pours the sand in there. And he says, "Now is it full?" And everybody's a little gun shy at this point. He said, "Well, maybe, but maybe not." And he says, "Well, it's not." And he reaches under the table and he gets a pitcher of water. And he pours the water in there. And then the water comes up to the top. And he says to the audience, he says, "Now the jar is full." Now, what's the point of the story? And there were some people who had bad guesses. But he said, "Let me tell you what the point of this illustration is. You see all the gravel? You can't put any more gravel in there. You see all the sand? You can't put any more sand. You can't put any more water in there." He said, here's the point. If I hadn't put the big rocks in first, they would have never gotten in. The jar would have filled up with gravel, sand, and water. And the stuff we do every day, the emails, the fires we're putting out, the customer issues we're addressing, you know, all the things that we do every day, that's gravel, sand, and water. But every quarter, you and your leadership team need to say this, ask yourselves this. What are three or four big rocks that we need to achieve this 90-day period that if we don't focus on them every week and put them in the jar first, they're not going to get done. And you need to set company rocks every 90 days and individual rocks in your leadership team every 90 days. That's what we mean by rocks. And this is powerful because then everybody's working to accomplish these things. One of the challenges that I've known Howard now for nearly 10 years and been following what he's done, and what you're in here in this phenomenal program is incredible. The tools, the resources you're getting here is awesome. But you know what? Do you know how many people actually take this and implement? Everybody intends to. If I said, how many of you intend to implement the systems and the things that Howard is giving you and providing for you? Every one of you would raise your hand. But here's the reality. If you don't make some of this rocks for the next 90 days, I can guarantee you, you will not implement any of this. You won't. And so why are you here? Don't pretend. Take it, make it a rock, and say, listen, I can't implement all the systems tomorrow, but over the next 90 days, this is one I want to tackle. This is going to be our rock, or these are going to be our rocks for the next 90 days, and we're going to look at them every single week. When do you look at them? In your weekly meeting. You have a weekly leadership meeting, and part of what you do every week in that meeting is you review your rocks. And I promise you, if you will do that, you will implement. And if you implement, it'll transform your business and it'll transform your life. I can't stress that enough. That's the biggest heartbreak Howard and I talk about with business owners. We share things with them. We give them resources. We have seen it in our own businesses. And we say, take this. Use it. Put it into practice. And you know what? Next week, our week gets filled up with gravel, sand, and water. And we never get the big rocks in the jar. And then the next week, well, it doesn't get any better. And before we know it, it's Q1 2020. And we haven't implemented a doggone thing. So, you've got to decide every quarter, as a leadership team, what are going to be your company rocks. Those 3 to 5 big things, you know, we got to focus on them every week. Because if we don't, it's not going to happen. And then what are our individual rocks? Every individual on the leadership team needs to have 3 to 5 rocks. That they say, these are my rocks personally, that I'm going to implement. And if you do that at the end of 90 days, you will be amazed at how it changes for the good things in your company. And so that's the EOS model. That's how you get traction. So if you haven't read the book, Traction, I highly recommend it. All of this is talked about in the book. You said you've been implementing it some in your business. What's... Okay. Very good. And he mentioned, what's your name, sir?
Perry.
Thank you for sharing that. So one of the things Perry mentioned is something that we do in every meeting. And by the way, we give you a meeting agenda because good meetings have 5 characteristics. Number 1, they happen on the same day. Number 2, they happen at the same time. Number 3, they follow the same agenda. Number 4, they start on time. And number 5, they end on time. Those are the 5 basic meeting rules. You got to follow those. And so we give you the agenda to follow, which includes a scorecard review, a rock review. But at the end of the meeting, we call these meetings level 10 meetings, because at the end of the meeting, what we do is what Perry was referring to, is we rate the meeting. You know, a lot of times people don't want to be in meetings because meetings are just so life draining. But EOS meetings following this agenda are actually life giving, and people are eager to be a part of them. And at the end of the meeting, we rate the meeting. How was this meeting today on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being high? Let's go around the room. We take 5 minutes, we evaluate and rate the meeting. And you know what that does? What gets measured gets improved. And so maybe that week the rating wasn't real high. So you don't need to discuss it a lot. You just say, what would have made it a better meeting? You tell me. What would have made it a better meeting? What would have made it a better meeting? Okay. Next week, y'all, let's all work together to make this a 10 next week, okay? And you know what? People leave bad meetings going, I can't wait till the next meeting. Instead of leaving a bad meeting going, oh, I hope we never have to come back to this again. They come back with enthusiasm because they're wanting to improve. They're wanting to raise that score. Because what gets measured gets improved. All right. Any questions? Yes, okay. Sherry?
Yes, you said that there were three things you should be training on: leadership, safety, and
systems. Very good. Lewis?
The software that you mentioned again.
Process Street is a great tool. You can create checklists in it, and then you can, there's a little fee to it, it's a subscription fee, but it's not very expensive. And each of your people can bring it up on their phone. Maybe they're in the field or whatever. They go, oh, I need to follow. What's the process on this? And they look it right up. They could. Yes, absolutely. Process Street. Yeah. And you can track it and see if they did it too. And the other one is called Pipefy. Pipefy is a little more robust. I have a couple of manufacturing clients who are ISO companies or API certified companies, and they like Pipefy a little better, P-I-P-E-F-Y. But in both of these softwares, you can upload videos, you know, training videos. If, you know, here's the checklist, but here's a link that if you forgot how to do this, click on this link. You can do a 2 or 3 minute video. Just record it on your phone, upload it to Process Street, and it's there for your team when they need it. Process Street. Pipefy. Pipe, P-I-P-E-F-Y.
Thank you. Would you say again the five elements of the break meeting?
Number one, you have the same day. If your meeting is going to be on Tuesday, it needs to be on Tuesday every week. Not Tuesday this week, Wednesday next week, Monday the following week. Same day, same time. Nope, we're going to do 9 o'clock this week, but next week we're going to meet at 1 o'clock. No, same time. Because what that does is it creates a rhythm. And your people need the rhythm because they'll build their lives. You know, how many times do we say, oh, we don't have time for meetings? You know what? You build your life around rhythms. And if it's on there, you build everything else around that. So same day, same time, same agenda. And we give you the agenda for the level 10 meeting. And then you start on time and you end on time. And we preach Vince Lombardi's quote. Maybe y'all have heard it. Vince Lombardi told his team, he said, if you're early, you're on time. And if you're on time, you're late. And if you're late, you're lost. And we preach that. So everybody gets to the meetings a few minutes early because, you know, they want to be ready to go right at start time. Other questions? So this is something you can self-implement if you want to. You can take the book. You can go online. A lot of these tools you can download. Some of them you can't. And you can work on it on your own. What a lot of companies do is they hire an implementer, and I'm an EOS implementer. I'm a licensed implementer, and I come in and work with companies for a day, once a quarter, and help them implement. I bring additional tools as part of the EOS package if you want it. And also, Howard and I have been talking about a way that for his people who might want to do it, actually a more economical way for you, if you want to do this with some other inner circle people, you can do it. So if you have interest in that, see me or see Howard afterwards.
I'm big on face-to-face meetings.
Okay. Okay.
How do you at EOS feel about this? You know, when I'm really focused on my EOS meeting, I feel like one of the face to face. I don't want to call you into this because there's one component of that where we're getting honest, we're talking about how we're feeling about the business. People will hide behind or over the phone. What is your feeling about that?
Communication, there are three elements to communication. There's the spoken word, there's the tone, and there's the body language. 58% of communication is body language. 35% is tone. Only a small amount is actual words. Now, words are powerful, don't misunderstand me. But when you're in a meeting, you're not only in a face-to-face meeting, you get the words, but you also get the tone. You don't get the tone in emails. That's the challenge with digital communication. And you definitely don't get the body language.
So right again.
Yeah, you are right again. And so here's what happens a lot of times. And this is a wonderful technology. And Howard uses it a lot. If we have a remote meeting, I recommend that it's always, and sometimes you may need to, it's always by Zoom. And it's always visual. I want to see you. I want to see your face as we're talking. I want to see your eyes. I want to listen to your tone. I want the full communication. You don't always get that on phone. And honestly, you don't get much of that via digital email communication. So all of those communication channels are good, and they have their place, and we use them all. But Perry, you're right. I agree with you on that, that I want to see you if we're having an EOS meeting, a leadership meeting. Any other questions? Great questions. Yes, one more.
The
EOS. The iOS belongs to Apple.
Oh,
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I forgot to cover that. I'm sorry, I'm teasing you. So one last thing and then we'll wrap up with this. Under issues, there are two things that we're addressing, two tools that we use. The first is the issues list. And what you do as part of the VTO and as part of the meeting agenda, you keep track every week of issues. You're tracking those, and we're solving those in our leadership meeting. Well, how do we solve them? We have a tool called IDS, and it stands for Identify, Discuss, Solve. Because issues need to get resolved. They need to get solved so we can move on. We don't want gravel in our shoe. Let's get them solved and let's move on. And so we IDS. We identify, discuss, and solve. All right. I'm available if you need me afterwards. I'm going to hang out a while. If you're interested in the possibility of being a part of a group implementation, see Howard afterwards or see me, and we'll talk to you about that. I think Howard would be a better person to see, but I'm available too. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that mine?
That's for you if you want.
Thanks.
So, Glenn, quick question.
Yes, sir.
So, let's say read the book. Right? And just like, how many of you guys have ever read Howard's Five Secrets book? Okay, so I read the book, and I say, you know what, I'm going to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. What's my likelihood that I'm actually going to get it done? Being honest, 100% honest.
If you don't jumpstart it, I think the likelihood is extremely low.
Okay.
So there are some things you can do to kind of jumpstart it. And that's with the process, that's why we use an implementer that helps you. It's not impossible. There are companies that have done it. Alyssa, have y'all done it on your own?
Yeah, but I want to say, that's what I was going to say. I'm an implementer, and I wrote
Oh. Book, went through Addiction 7, all that kind of stuff. And I probably maybe got 25% of it. So I've already signed up to do the thing with you with my integrated.
Okay,
yet,
cool.
Because we know that there's more that we can hone, and more that we can learn, and they can do it better because we've got questions.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely.
I'm a notorious find it, do it, implement, and I can't.
If you want to be a self-implementer, you can do like Alyssa did and go online and go through their implementer training and do it internally. But I appreciate you sharing that, because having an outside person who has done it a lot will help you.
It's also the dedicated time.
Yes.
You actually come and spend the time with the people, work through it, think through it, all that versus...
It's part of traction. That's part of the meeting rhythm. It really is.
Absolutely. Sherry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, the other part of it is that I just find in the inner circle community that when you're on a deal with a lead, you're just going to do your, you're not going to come to the meeting and go, well, I didn't do mine. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Yeah,
it's called accountability.
I'm in, you're in. I think there's some other people that have already signed up, but we're really excited about it. I feel like it takes all the stuff. It's not like adding something new. It feels like it's just, okay, we have all the tools, now let's kind of package them up together, and now let's just kind of shift it into the next drive.
Yep.
Perfect. Bow.
And other question. So let's say I grab the book, I go out on my own, I implement 25% of it. How long does that take me?
A long time.
A ballpark.
How long have you been doing it, Alyssa?
Okay.
And we're doing some pieces of it well, and we're kind of honing it, but I mean, yeah, it's a long time.
When we do it with groups, you have it all down in 3 meetings.
I was about to say, and how long do those 3 meetings take?
One day each.
So 3 days?
24 hours.
Yeah. And so what we're talking about is having 4 meetings next year. 3 to get you fully implemented, and the 4th one starts a quarterly process that you can continue on your own if you want to, or you can use an outside person. But so actually the whole implementation process I recommend is 4 meetings. But by the 3rd meeting, you've got the implementation pretty much under your belt.
Okay, so just to...
4th meeting sets up the rhythm for continuation.
Got it. What were you going to say?
Okay.
Let me say something about what Sherry said. Most companies I work with, I do it just with that one company at a time. I mean, I work with multiple companies, but one at a time. And so my rate is $4,000. The implementers vary from $4,000 to $5,000 for each day. And so if you do the 4 basic days at $4,000, that's $16,000. And that's the lower rate. If you use some other implementers, it could be as high as $20,000. Howard's put together a program where the cost, I think, is only about $10,000, something like that.
Exactly.
With $10,000. And you get a lot of other stuff in addition, plus the group experience. So
absolutely. So again...
Yeah, it is a lot less. That's what Sherry was saying. She wasn't insulting me or anything.
Pulling us all together, we did something fabulous.
Yeah. And it makes it more economical for everybody.
So what you're telling me,
I'm
just
teasing.
Make sure I get this.
I just made Sherry feel bad.
But I'm over it now.
So good. Good.
Is this true, Glenn, that somebody who's in here who's just heard about this model today for the first time, within a year from now, they will have it all completed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So
you'll be fully running in a year.
Everybody hear that?
Yeah.
Like, that, to me, that gets me excited, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I'm going through it, too. Like, I'm sitting in, I'm taking notes. Yesterday, I was just, like, sucking it all up, like, sponge moment right there.
I got home yesterday, Glenn, from after you were
pastor staff seriously. We seriously could. I mean, I want obviously want to see everybody, but so much information, so much just leveling up in each of these areas. It was very inspiring.
Absolutely. So again, if you guys have questions about this program, you're interested in the program, Glenn's going to be back there. Howard is actually finishing up in the other room, so he'll be back in later. But please go back there, get your name at least to the team, and get with Glenn also. We'll get you one of those order forms. We'll get you guys all signed up. And you get to see what the tentative dates are for those upcoming full day events. All right?